Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
There's a nationwide funding crisis that prevents teachers from getting the resources they need. That's where Donors Choose comes in. People like you can help teachers get funding for supplies and experiences their students need to succeed. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
In a week packed with talk of tariffs and Donald Trump's Liberation Day, so-called, it might be easy to forget that just on Tuesday, the Dáil was debating no confidence in the Ceann Comhairle over the Dáil speaking rights row. So we're going to talk about that with our Friday forum, as well as looking at international events too. I'm joined by Senator Anne Rabbitt of Fianna Fáil, their social welfare spokesperson, Jed Nash of the Labour Party, their chair and TD for Louth, and spokesperson for finance and public expenditure, Kevin Dáil, group head of news at Media House Ireland, and Christina Finn, political editor of The Journal. Good morning and welcome one and all. I'm going to start with the journalists on this one, exclude the politicians, to talk about what happened on Tuesday. Now, Kevin, I went away for a wedding in Australia and the speaking rights row was in full swing. I came back 3 weeks later and it's still going on.
Yeah.
Bizarre. And I'm looking at talk of tariffs and economic ruin. I'm looking at, earthquakes and all of that in Myanmar, and still the speaking row.
And I think as we sit here on a Friday, Pat, hopefully the steam has finally gone out of it. You're right, though. And I think the public certainly reached that point that you're trying to make, which is that went on way too long and reached a level of craziness that I think it didn't deserve. I think the politicians finally figured that out, perhaps after the whole incident with Michael Lowry giving the V sign and Paul Murphy's video. I think after that, people started to realise they needed to find a way to draw a line under it. And in some ways, the no confidence motion did. But I think part of the reason that it had gone on so long is because there was so little at stake. It was easy to have a big kerfuffle, a big row, for people to be walking out in the plinth, holding the whole situation to hostage, because that's an easier row to have than one on housing or health. So if you're looking to create political disruption, picking something with the stakes so low is perfect.
Christina?
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree. I think the speaking rights row was well flagged with this government from day one in terms of the controversy and the issue that it was causing the opposition. And I know that when we started writing about it in the Journal, the numbers and the viewing of those articles for something that's so, you know, intricate in, you know, Dáil proceedings, it's hardly a sexy subject for people to read about. But people could see or could smell something was off here. And I think nobody really came out great from this, because I think there was just a stalemate so much and people dug their heels in on both sides. And like I was speaking to people even in government that were saying, you know, questioning why Micheál Martin was sort of dying on this hill in terms of, there was talk of negotiations, talks of finding a way around it. And at the end of the day, nobody really seemed to be compromising on any which way. And ultimately, that came down to a vote of no confidence in Verona Murphy. She was, I suppose, the one that had the target on her back at the end of it. And I do think now, given this where we are economically and what we're dealing with this week, I think we will see the air, you know, come out of this now. But we have seen, I think, you know, those walkouts have those continue when those opposition, when those questions are being asked. We are having people leave
by
and
supporters
whether
of
that
the
will
government.
Continue, perhaps.
By the others, as we call them now.
The others, yeah. Now, the question, this is all about, what, 10 minutes in a week?
Yeah. I mean, it's about the principles. I know that's what the opposition parties will say. But to be honest, I really think it's all about Michael Lowry. It all goes back to the very beginning. And that's the bit I can't understand from Micheál Martin. Micheál Martin clearly made a decision that he wanted a big enough majority in the Dáil that he would get the 4.5 to 5 years out of the government. And that's to be respected. What leader wouldn't want a strong, stable majority? But in the process of doing that, he allowed Michael Lowry become the kingmaker. And those independents, I think, were a little bit naive. And even Finian McGrath said to me during the week that it was a major cock-up on their part to have allowed Michael Lowry when it could have been Marion Harkin or Sean Canny out front. And somehow Michael Lowry became the guy. And I don't know how Micheál Martin did not see that that was going to create a hell of a stink. And to be honest, I think that's what largely is the root of all.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's a general agreement, isn't there, Christina, that this was a political stroke that went wrong, went off the rails.
Yeah, and I think, like, I was speaking to people even within Fianna Fáil that were questioning why Micheál Martin was so wedded to having this majority. Like, you know, they're questioning, like, what exactly does he need this massive majority for? What's coming down the line? And perhaps it is what we're talking about this week, you know, economic uncertainty, ramming legislation through, maybe very difficult political decisions. Mm. And maybe he's saying that he needs those numbers and
yeah,
he needs Michael Lowry on his side. But that's
no
a
matter
big...
how many people you have on board, if the political decisions become too unpopular, it'll be the helpers overboard, the others overboard straight away.
Well, the other strange thing, if you think about what's left, even in the last week or fortnight, they could have jettisoned Michael Lowry. The deal is done now. Do you think those juniors and super junior ministers are going to turn around and go, oh, right, you didn't, you've kind of screwed
my sword for Michael.
They're not giving up those ministerial seats.
Why was Micheál Martin so wedded to all of this?
I suppose really when the original negotiations were done, like, Micheál Martin's a man of principles, to be honest with you. And I go back to the start, and I wasn't part of the programme for government negotiations, so it's important to say that. But from the outside looking in, there's no doubt it was the regional group that stepped forward that were prepared to enter into those government. We were the largest party. It was upon Micheál to form that government. And with that, experience also was part of it. He was able to bring about some of the new TDs that have come into it. And I hear what you're saying and what Finian had said. But he had the experience to negotiate. Like, for the previous 5 years, every vote that we took and some very unpopular votes, Michael Lowry, Noel Grealish would always have supported government.
Okay, Jed, where do you stand on all of this? The Ceann Comhairle herself has said she bears no any ill will for anything that may have been said in the debates and the vote and so on. She's happy to deal with everybody. How do you feel about her?
As he should, but remember what got us into this position in the first place, and I don't want to go through a history lesson with listeners, because we've to a point moved on. The decision is taken. We live in a democracy. And that decision is respected. It's a numbers game at the end of the day. But we actually do need to focus on how and why we got here. And it is absolutely all about Michael Lowry. There are Fine Gael backbenchers who I've gotten to know very well over the years, who themselves are absolutely mortified at the lengths to which Micheál Martin and Simon Harris have gone to defend the interests of Michael Lowry. That being said, I am a fan of Dáil reform, okay? I've been around long enough to know how imperfect the institution is and how reforms need to be introduced to modernise how the Dáil does its business, to recognise everybody's individual mandates, whether you're in government or opposition. But this was a stroke too far. This was everybody trying to pull the wool over the people's eyes to create the impression that those who not only support the programme but help to negotiate it are somehow in opposition at the same time. So I think, you know, he was caught by the you-know-whats, by the public on this, and he doubled down and continued to double down on defending Michael Lowry. I mean, if you want to have a discussion about ensuring that Dáil procedures are modernised and that, let's call it speaking rights if you wish. And by the way, this is not about speaking rights at all. Let's not fall for that sort of government trope that this is about speaking rights or additional 8 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever the case might be. It actually isn't. It's actually about a fundamental issue about how our parliament works. I remember Micheál Martin actually over the last few weeks.
Explain to me,
well,
if it's not about
what
the speaking rights,
is, what we need is a Westminster style, you know, PMQs kind of system.
Why are we saying this is speaking rights, Ralph?
Remember,
if you say it's not about speaking rights.
But remember this, right? This is not Westminster. We have one of the most centrally controlled executive government systems in Western Europe and in any modern sophisticated liberal democracy. So we're not comparing like with like here at all. I'd be up for a discussion about how you modernised all procedures. But there was nothing in the Fianna Fáil manifesto about ensuring that Fianna Fáil or government but backing representatives should have more.
22 hours as part of Dáil reform. There was Pat, just while you were away, there was 22 hours spent on Dáil reform where all the whips and various other people were part of the discussion. And they tried to, where the Ciarán Comhairle sat in and she chaired it and everything else, and they tried to hammer it out. And when they couldn't reach an agreement, they had to bring it into the floor of the Dáil. So it wasn't like there was a stalemate for the 3 weeks. In actual fact, they were inside trying to discuss it 22 hours later and couldn't reach an agreement.
When the Ciarán Comhairle actually made an actual determination on standing orders to say this particular group are in government, that's the situation. What happened then? Government then decided to cobble together an alternative proposition which left us where we were. And of course, and I don't want to reopen this, but it was the conduct of the Ciarán Comhairle just 2 weeks ago that led the opposition to start posing questions about whether or not the entire House could have confidence in her. That matter has now been settled. And could I say this, in the interest of democracy, I think the Ciarán Comhairle herself needs to make efforts to mend bridges with the opposition and to ensure that her own bona fides are better established.
I think the conduct of the Ciarán Comhairle, though, Jed, is you can't comment on the conduct of the Ciarán Comhairle without commenting on the conduct of the opposition. And I think you're right. I think that the public do believe it was a stroke, that it was a stroke too far, and that they can see through what has been presented as 8 minutes on a Thursday. But I also think that the public can see what happened last week and the way people stood up and shouted and roared like kids in a creche and go, that's wrong as well.
I think the people are capable of discerning that there are different parties in the opposition and people who behave.
Not sure they are, Jed, anymore. Yeah. When you're all walking out and calling yourself the combined opposition.
It suits government, I think, to represent it like that. If there's one thing the opposition can agree on is that this was a stroke. That's it. We have our political differences, our cultural differences, our philosophical differences. We will continue to have that with other parties. If you couldn't unite on this,
I was sitting in the press gallery, which sits just above Ronan Murphy during that proceeding. And I mean, the sound was like deafening. You could hardly hear. So I can understand how Ronan Murphy did have issues hearing what was being said. But I felt sitting there having the view that I think that the public could see that it was a stroke. I kind of felt that the opposition had shot themselves in the foot a bit at that point, because I don't think there was any need. I think, OK, getting up and voicing and being a bit loud and raucous is no problem when you're trying to make your point as an opposition. But I think it went a step too far in terms of it wasn't edifying for people to see back home, and the people that they had on side on the issue perhaps were saying, oh, come on, like all you had to do was present that case, present clearly the Michael Lowry
Christina,
link.
Do you believe they exploited the newness, the naivety of the Ciarán Comhairle compared to, say, a Seán O'Farrell or a John McGuinness,
the government exploited the naivety of the Ciarán Comhairle or the opposition?
That the opposition...
Remember, the election of the Ciarán Comhairle was a government enterprise.
Sure, but
it was a government enterprise.
They pick on someone who's new and
vulnerable. It has never been
barred.
Yeah,
I was
questioning whether, having seen other Ciarán Comhairles sit in that role, how they would have reacted. There was a few times where Fiona Murphy, like, she didn't ring the bell. She didn't perhaps use other instruments that other Ciarán Comhairle would have in the past. I think Fiona Murphy is very new in the job. I don't envy anyone that's in that position in terms of knowing the ins and outs and how the Dáil works. Now, they get paid $250,000 a year, so it's not a bad gig if you can get it. But I do think there is a naivety and inexperience there that will need to be picked up.
But she's still got on her feet, Christine, and she says, I am on my feet. And there is, Pat, a standing order of a respect piece within the Dáil, to be quite honest with you, that she did stand on her feet. She didn't use all of her ringing bells or anything else like that. But she says, I am on my feet. And normally when the Ciarán Comhairle, and Fiona Freely, if he was on his feet, people would resume their seats and an order would be established. It wasn't afforded.
Do any of us honestly know how we would, Pat, you've the most experience here, so maybe it's a question for you, but do any of us honestly know how we would deal with that situation? Because I was thinking about
I can't keep control of four of you. Never mind the entire house.
But I think I'd have sat there and just let them shout. If they went on for 3 hours, a bit like what you see in the American Congress sometimes, just let them keep shouting and see they go hoarse eventually, because it was an impossible situation in that moment. But I think Christine is right in that I think the risk of the public mood flipping against the opposition was incredibly high at that moment, and then Michael Lowry went and gave two fingers and it flipped it all back again.
All right, look, breaking news. China is to impose tariffs of 34% on all American goods. So we'll talk about that after this break.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Aviva.ie.
This.
Now, we're still hoping to reach our target of €85,000 for Make-A-Wish. So do get donating if you have any spare change at all. Make-A-Wish.ie/donate. Now, just before the break, we mentioned that China has imposed a tariff of 34% on all US goods, which mirrors exactly the tariff imposed by Donald Trump on China. Your reaction, Kevin?
Well, I suppose they're the first to strike back. So that's a strategy. Europe obviously taking a very different.
Did you know that right now there is a nationwide funding crisis that prevents schools and teachers from getting the resources they need? That's where you and Donors Choose come in. Since 2000, Donors Choose has been the most trusted nonprofit teachers turn to for the supplies and experiences their students need to succeed. Join us to empower teachers and inspire students. Learn more at donorschoose.org.
Approach a more kind of wait and see step. So I suppose this will be interesting now, because when they wake up in America in a couple of hours, we will see what Donald Trump will put out on Truth Social in response to this. And that might give us sitting on this side of the world some sense of what his thinking's at. Is this an idea now? You hit back, now we get in a room, negotiate, or you hit back and I hit back on you again, and we just fire back and forth. So I suppose we'll know more by bedtime tonight of what Donald Trump really wants from his tariffs.
And Trump is supposed to have a conversation in the next few days with Xi. So he tends to be a prisoner of the last person he's listened to, doesn't he?
There's a lot, that is the theory. And I think a lot of people who study Donald Trump very closely say, yes, it's the last man in the room, has the biggest influence on him. So could we see, I mean, we've seen what happened with Canada. We've seen what happened with Mexico and how quickly he walked back some of the tariffs after he initially announced them. So it'll be interesting to see, does he now do the same with China, or is he going hell for leather on this? So I suppose that's what it'll come down to.
And what do you think our strategy should be? I mean, we're going to try to be as one with the EU, but we have, if you like, a special interest too.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest with you, the Taoiseach has set out, like, we are one with the EU. We have to enter into that part of the negotiations. That seems to be our strategy coming from this side. But at the same time, he's at the moment, as we speak, meeting with leaders of industry, unions and everything else down in government buildings, seeing the impact of what it's having at a local point as well. So we're having our own conversations, but at the same time, we're part of the EU strategy approach.
Christina, I mean, Trump is taking a wrecking ball to the world economy, but also to his own economy, because the very idea that every widget that America needs, they're going to make themselves, that's just not realistic in the modern world of complex supply chains.
Yeah, no, it's certainly not, even with the likes of those, with China's supply, you know, the likes of Walmart, some of those big massive chains.
China supplied the Trump Bibles.
Yeah, so like there's things that are definitely going to impact the American consumer. And, you know, that's why I think it was interesting to see the pharmaceuticals be left off the announcement by Trump. It'd be interesting to hear who got in his ear there in terms of someone saying, look, the medicines that are going to be brought in here for Americans.
He made the point that if there were to be a war, that America could not supply itself with antibiotics. Now, we know that we supply the raw ingredients for many complex pharmaceuticals. We make the raw ingredients here. And maybe there is a realization that for the next little while anyway, we need this stuff from outside. Jed?
Yeah, I think there probably is. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry was the one that we were all concerned about and continue to be concerned about. It's on Donald Trump's big list of five sectors that he says he wants to target. So I'm hoping that if we can, for want of a better description, to kind of better angels might descend on him and explain to him that it's going to be really practical difficulties. I mean, he said in the Rose Garden the other day, you're right, Pat, you know, if they can't produce enough antibiotics, I mean, if there's an issue in the US, then they're going to have to be importing stuff anyway. Like, he doesn't seem to understand, there's a couple of things about it, doesn't seem to understand the complexity of the pharmaceutical supply chain at all, right? We've spent considerable resources and we've had a political focus on the success of governments over actually many generations building up a highly productive pharmaceutical industry and developing those skills. It's really important that, given that we will be facing headwinds one way or the other over the next period of time in pharma, and indeed, even if you just look at the baseline 20% tariff anyway and see how that sort of rolls out over the next period of time, that when certain sectors of the economy wobble, when they're open to exposure, that we don't have a situation like we had 12, 13, 14, 50 years ago, where there are mass redundancies in certain sectors. Because that's why we're developing this idea in Labour, and it's not a new idea, it's an old idea, but an idea I think that's time has come, and it will be discussed at the Leaf today. IBEC now support it, that there ought to be a specially designed short-time work scheme as part of the Irish labour market landscape anyway, to make sure that when sectors like, say, pharmaceuticals are in difficulty, that the state and employers assist to actually retain people, keep them in work, keep their skills going at a time when maybe work is in short supply, because this could very well be a medium-term
problem. This is what you might call the Ryanair technique. They kept their pilots and their air crew up to snuff during COVID.
Well,
they knew that when it was over, yeah, they would come roaring back.
It's a German initiative, actually. There's an established German scheme called Kurzarbeit. It's operated actually by the trade unions and the employer confederations. They make interventions, keeping people close to the employer at difficult periods, understanding as well that these things can be periodic, okay? Because the last thing we want to see happen is, like, you know, who'll ever forget the last recession? 150,000 construction workers gone. We're paying the price for that now. We will still have a good pharma industry post this when this all unravels. We need to keep it.
But the other side of this is the tariffs are here. They are coming. We don't know, different to COVID. COVID, we were hoping we could have the immunisation to get ourselves out of this. We don't know how long it's going to take us to get out of this, the tariff war as it will unfold. So what we have to learn from the economic crash as well is that capital infrastructure is going to be a big part as well, to ensure that we have the housing supply so as we can actually diversify and look to other ways
of building the economy. That's not a new issue. I mean, unfortunately, and I'm not making a narrow political point, I'm genuinely not, Anne, but I mean, we've had a boom that was wasted. We're now, I was listening to Micheál Martin this morning in Morning Ireland saying, you know, I was thinking, wouldn't this guy make a great Taoiseach? So all the houses we need, how we need to look after our competitiveness, how we need to actually ensure that we scale up Indigenous Irish enterprise to be competitive globally. Labour's been talking about a new industrial strategy for Ireland for a decade now, because we've been kind of phoning this in, our over-reliance.
Yeah, but Labour's got to get itself elected, doesn't it? You
know, yeah, we do, and we're making that case all of the time.
Could have been in government instead of Michael Lowry.
Yeah, well, it would have been great, but sure, Micheál wanted the quickest route to office and that was it. Cheap dates and the independent benches and a policy-free environment. Off you go, and we're paying the price to that now. Actually, now is actually what we need.
But
we actually do need stability,
to do?
But we need new initiatives.
But do you know
what we need you to do, Jed?
Do you know what we really need opposition
to
do?
Happy to take your advice.
No, just listen. Thank you. What we really need opposition to do is actually to give government pairings so that our ministers that are in positions can go and talk with their counterparts right across Europe or right across the world.
Is this opposition government people or government people?
No, we need opposition to allow pairings. We don't have pairings. So that's what we're asking for. So that's not there at the moment. I don't wish to go back to the old piece about the Dáil reform.
What we've said very clearly in Labour is this is a national interest time, right?
Thank you.
We will have our differences with government about policy formulation, about how they may go, but this is really, really important. When jobs and businesses are at stake, and actually when the economic model that we in Labour helped to define over many, many years is at stake, that's a time that we actually need to... We asked Simon Harris 4 weeks ago for a meeting to talk about trade, to talk about the government's approach. We're meeting again next week. To see if we can kind of align our views on that. And government has assured the opposition that they will share as much information
as possible. We've been talking a lot about pharmaceutical industry, and obviously the other flip side of this for us is the tech industry. And I was at numerous press conferences yesterday with Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue, and it was something that was raised kind of repeatedly with them, even with the Taoiseach. And I do sense there is a reluctance to sort of address that issue. We had other countries in the EU come out yesterday talking about digital services tax, which is direct conflict to what we want. Micheál Martin coming out saying they don't want any truck with that. But then when it's put to, Pascal Donoghue, Jack Chambers, this conversation about unity and Europe acting as one. But the question is, like, at some point a proposal is going to be put on the table. And is that proposal going to be at the detriment to Ireland and our economy, and no one seems to be able to answer what the answer is.
How would
a
digital services tax tariff work? Does anyone know? I hear talk about it, but I don't really understand it.
This idea has been knocking around now for a good number of years.
How is it levied? And who pays it? Who does it affect?
Well, that's the question. And I think in some ways...
Does anybody around this table know?
Okay, there's a couple of things. There's a history.
In a sentence, Jed.
No, I can't, because it actually hasn't been defined what it's going to mean. And it'll mean different things in different countries anyway, right?
Different sectors.
Obviously, that would be inimical as well to the Irish tech industry and the jobs on which we rely, and we would not be supportive of any move on that. That being said, I mean, the European Union is in a dilemma here. There's the question, okay, how do you stand up to bullies? He's not a good faith actor, Donald Trump. What language does he understand? We're talking about goods at the moment. We could move to services.
Yes.
He doesn't understand services because he doesn't have the brains to understand services. He understands things that he can feel and
physical,
touch,
yeah.
tangible things. Services, yeah. And if you look at services, by the way, that's where the deficit changes, okay? Mm-hmm. Goods is a very, very different thing altogether.
No, but I'm trying to get a handle on who's going to be tariffed. Right. I mean, are you talking about every kid who's got Facebook or Instagram or X or Twitter on their phone, that in order to have that service they have
who
to
knows?
Pay?
Yeah.
Is that what you're
who
talking
knows?
About?
This, at
I
this point
know.
Is simply a threat. That's what it is.
But
it's been held in reserve for the European Union.
But
we will
it's
not
support. Just social media.
Yeah.
I think everybody thinks tech as
yeah.
social media
yeah,
companies in a quote, but you know, there'd be the likes of, you know, payment processing,
Stripe
and all that, you know,
you
things that are integral, I suppose, for, you know, multinational companies.
But Stripe is headquartered in California and San Francisco and in Dublin. It's got two headquarters. Where does that leave? It's an Irish company.
So the likes of some of the insurance companies that might be based in Galway that provide telehealth support, which is a service to the med sector in the US in processing their claims. We would have that. That's a service.
But this whole thing just shows how complicated, like even when we're talking about negotiations, like how complex those sort of negotiations are.
Yeah, we can understand the tariff on a bottle of wine or a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, that's an easy one to sort of sort out.
The thing to your point though about how we respond to this, and I'm not sure, like we seem to live in a permanent crisis. So we went from Brexit to COVID to now Trump land and
Ukraine in between.
Yeah, there's so much of it, you nearly forget the sequence. But what people, I think, haven't fully realised is there's this idea that maybe we should be trying to use a bit of Irish charm on Trump and to go it alone, and that Europe might retaliate in the wrong way for us. Whatever Europe does, we have to get on that bandwagon, because the reality is we're actually getting away really lightly at the moment, because most of what the tariffs are hitting is not the stuff we're worried about just now. That'll change. If you're in Germany today, you're in a far worse place than we are today, at least in Ireland. So even though we mightn't like if they retaliate by hitting some of the agri-food sector or alcohol, we kind of have to get on board with it, because if we go back to Trump and isolate ourselves from Europe and he comes after us, we'll be on a hell of a lot more than 20%. That 20% is the European average. Our deficit is much more.
And I think you're right, Kevin, because we have to calculate our response here as to actually find out actually what could do is more damage in the negotiation. So we have to have more of a calculated response to actually what we can get the best out of.
You talk about a calculated response. Anyone who saw that Rose Garden presentation and the calculations of who was tariffing what, and we know he made the mistake about the penguins and the unoccupied islands and all the rest. Reunion.
Mistake or did it on purpose, Pat, I'd question.
It's part of the EU, you know. Yeah. It had a separate tariff all to itself. But I'm just wondering, when you've got people who are making calculations that are simply not true, they are erroneous, what's the point in actually treating anything they do with any degree of seriousness?
But see, what he has done is he has set, this is my own personal opinion, what he has done is he's set himself out as the king. He wants everybody to come flocking back in to have that negotiations, the over and back. Like we see, the last person in front of him is who influences the next part of the decision.
Here,
transactional.
Here is the end game, and that is, how do you get what you want while making Trump feel that he's had a win, Kevin?
Yeah, well, I think
at
some point in a few months' time, Ursula von der Leyen or whoever ends up representing Europe in these talks that take place basically have to tell Donald Trump he's won.
Yeah.
You don't have to show him the figures, because he doesn't understand the figures anyway. He's making them up. And
Christina?
Yeah, I think there'll be big conversations, and we're already seeing them in Europe in terms of energy, LNG, defence contracts. I think there's going to definitely be things that are waved in front of Donald Trump.
You do what Apple do. You say, yeah, Donald, we're going to spend $500 billion. We will, of course, no bother. How long are you in for? 4 years? Oh, yeah, grant.
That's said that after several hundred billion has been wiped off their valuation yesterday. I mean, Wall Street's going to open in just over 2 hours. And today, given what China have done, it's going to be absolutely catastrophic. Remember this. We're talking about the economics of this for now, right? But the politics of this is even probably more important. I don't think, you know, nobody who's advising Trump, if they can claim to be an economist, is going to be bothering a Nobel Prize jury anytime soon. This stuff is absolute madness. It's economic illiteracy. But this is actually ultimately about the ultra-nationalist MAGA project. So he doesn't care how chaotic this is and the impact on poor Brian, the automotive worker in the Rose Garden, who thinks he's going to get his job back. He's not. And if he does, he'll never be paid enough to be able to afford the shopping.
So I think the most important thing here is for Europe not to make a knee-jerk reaction whatsoever. I think we need to see how some of the other countries or states pan out on all of this. And yeah, most important is...
We are the biggest trade bloc, though, you know. So
yeah, but I do think it's very important to have an Irish person part and parcel along with those negotiations, because whatever he disliked to Europe... He certainly has some fondness for
Ireland. I'll
tell
you what we do. We'll send Verona Murphy in to help with that. Okay, on that note, Senator Anne Rabbitt of Fianna Fáil, thank you very much. Jed Nash, TD of the Labour Party and its party chair, thank you. Kevin Doyle, Group Head of News at Media House Ireland, and Christina Finn, Political Editor of The Journal. Now, just before we go, a final check on Wish Day. We'll hear just how much we've raised so far shortly, but our reporters have been joining the fundraising teams across the country, and right now we'll cross to Limerick, where Josh Crosby has been all morning. Morning, Josh. How's it going there?
Good morning, Pat, from a sunny Limerick. So right now I'm at the Jetland Shopping Centre, and this is only one of the locations in Limerick where fundraising is taking place for Wish Week. And I'm joined by the lead volunteer for Cork and Limerick, Martin Hannan. Good morning, Martin.
Morning, Josh.
Now, tell me, Martin, you've been involved with Make-A-Wish for 12 years, I believe.
I have, yeah.
So tell me, what was it that made you get involved and to keep coming back with your tremendous efforts?
There's two guys at work that were celebrating 20 years each, and they wanted to do something to mark that. And they said when they were doing that, they'd do it in favour of a charity. I signed up as a volunteer. The main thing that I did with them at that time was wish granting. And that, for me, as an adult, as a child in me, I just loved it, the idea, and explore with them. What is it that you really want in the whole world? While the circumstances might be tough or sad, quite often these children... They are tough and they're inspiring. That's how I started with Make-A-Wish.
And so we're here now in Jetland. Tell me, what's the reaction been so far during Wish Week?
It's been really positive. You know, quite often I think people identify, I don't know, is it the colour or the logo, they know about Make-A-Wish. And I think everybody wants to do as much as they can. They know that every little bit helps. So, yeah, it's encouraging. The buckets are filling and that's the main bit.
How are you doing?
Thank you very much.
Are you a local woman yourself?
I am.
Yeah, and you just have to donate, and you're the first person to donate here now for Make-A-Wish. But what is it that made you say you'd donate?
Could be any of our children. My daughter's autistic, so could be any of us.
Well, look, I'll leave you going now, Martin. You have a busy day ahead. You don't need me in the way here. So, look, all the best with everything, and fair play for all your teams putting in tremendous efforts across the country.
So, Josh, thanks very much, and thanks to support from News Talk. It's really, really appreciated. I'm glad to hear there's a good reaction from people that they've heard about Make-A-Wish as well from News Talk. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Mark.
And thank you very much to you, Josh, as well. And you have been busy donating. The total amount raised so far is €81,276, and the money is still coming in. And if you wish to help, you can go to makeawish.ie/donate to bring that target up. We're hoping for a total for the whole week of over €200,000. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Public schools across the country are facing a funding crisis, and classrooms are going without the essentials like pencils and books. But with the help of Donors Choose, people like you connect directly with teachers so students get what they need to succeed. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org today.